Nice is nice, of course, but a little muscle never hurts. Strength and serenity, the yin and yang of game prep.
Hey, let's go.
We're about to watch one of my dad's arm wrestling tournaments. You're about to see my dad yelling a lot. You're going to see a lot of super normal dudes come close to hurting their arm.
I know there's some Bears fans in the house, but we're standing right here in King Kingdom, where you are!
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score. That is the arm wrestling tournament from Hard Knocks. They showed Tyson Bagent going to see his dad dominate and win. David must have been puffy-chested knowing that you're one of the few men that have destroyed him.
I did, yeah.
And an actual...
On live television, yes. Actually. And that was even more pressure.
There was no fix in
actually.
There.
Yeah, it wasn't the fix. It was the live television, which I was filled with adrenaline in that moment. I just said,
"Yeah,
I can't lose. I'm taking him down," and
Superman,
I took him down.
Superman David Haw just bent his arm over.
A little embarrassing to beat the Travis Bagent in front of his son like that, but it had to be done.
312-644-6767, Caitlin is listening on the Odyssey app and knows Travis Bagent pretty well, I believe, right?
Well, I don't know him, but they were sitting right behind us recording the Hard Knocks thing. So we were chatting with them through the whole first quarter. It was pretty fun.
You were at the game when they were doing that segment? That part of it?
Yeah. Yeah, when you're watching, I'm the blonde sitting right in front of him. And so they show us, but yeah, they were chatting away. We weren't at the wrestling thing, but we were at the game. And the guy that was sitting next to him, he does some, he has some WWE or some arm wrestling show on one of the TV stations. And he and my husband were chatting after the game about some stuff. And yeah, they were very fun. And he came with them. I guess they're really good friends.
Right, that's the guy that he wrestled in the show, because he was the guy in the bar that was kind of leading everyone up, and then the two of them arm wrestled. And I mean, you see the size of those arms? I mean, this guy's
huge.
Got like arms like a leg. That's pretty cool, Caitlin.
Caitlin, how loud were they during the game?
Oh, loud. And he was chatting with people and high-fiving, and he's just so fun. But yeah, he was pretty loud. At the start, he was a little, once the game got going, he was just a tad bit more reserved when he got on there, but talking through it all the time, you know, just kind of like how they showed. So yeah, it was
That's pretty fun.
That's super
one
cool.
Member. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Caitlin. Yeah, appreciate that.
When
that's good stuff.
Tyson Bagent dove for the pylon.
Yes.
Scored that touchdown.
That's great.
And they had his dad react that way. Every dad watching could be like, yes. I would have done the same thing. That was a tremendous play. And you're like, they had that. That's what I think was really fun about being there, having that on camera. It's hilarious that she's calling in and listening, because we were just talking about that. Asked and answered.
Yes.
The guy next to him was the same guy.
And it was his buddy. So there you go. Andy is on the road. He wants to talk Hard Knocks. Hey, Andy.
Hey, guys. Yeah, you kind of touched on this a little bit, but this episode really resonated with me as a parent. You know, I think about watching my own kid playing baseball or soccer, and he's been a goalie before, and to see games decided by penalty kicks, and your heart is in your throat. And we're at the game also on Thursday, and my wife pointed it out. She saw the reads, and so we went over and talked to him during halftime, and his dad's like, man, we're just really enjoying, you know, being a part of this ride. We hope it lasts. We're hoping for the practice squad, and, you know, he's going to play a lot of the second half and all this. And, you know, and obviously they're very much invested, and, you know, but no matter what happens, obviously the kid got cut, but he can always say he played for the Chicago Bears and threw a touchdown pass on the defending Super Bowl champions' home turf. So that was pretty cool. And then obviously seeing, you know, Ian Wheeler and his mother, I mean, it just ripped your heart out just watching that stuff. And by the way, I do want to say I love our general manager, Ryan Poles. He has done a fantastic job rebuilding this team, having the buzz around the Bears like I can't remember for years. And then to see him at the end with Ian Wheeler in his office and just, you know, the way he treated that young man, what a special guy he is. And I think this is going to be a very special season.
Thanks for the phone call. That's a really good observation. I also thought that the moment, and it lingered, and it was long because it was a hug and it was emotional. But Ian Wheeler and his mother after the game, when they knew what they knew about his knee injury, that was powerful. It just was
no question
from a parent's standpoint, from a fan standpoint, just from a human perspective to see that emotion captured in that way. Wow. That was a lot. And you wish him well. As you say, I mean, obviously you want to look at the positives. The positive would be, well, he's going to be able to rehab under the Bears' care. He's going to be, you know, paid as a guy on injured reserve, and he's going to get another opportunity to come back. Will he ever be the same? You don't know. You don't know. But I guess in his case, he does have other things in his life that he thinks are as important as football. He deferred medical school to chase this NFL dream, and that's still alive, but he also has options if it doesn't work out. So it was just one of those moments that you're going to remember about this series, Hard Knocks, the way they handled the Bears, because that I don't know if there are any other moments in this four-episode arc so far that were any more powerful than that one.
Adam is on the road. Let's get to Adam. Good morning, Adam.
Morning, gentlemen. Love the show. Just two things. I'm going to be attending Caleb Williams' debut against Tennessee, and so I'm excited. So two things. One, what will success for the Bears and Caleb Williams look like in that first game? And two, what do the Bears plan to do different with this quarterback than the failures that they've had with previous quarterbacks? I'm just curious about those two points, guys. Thanks.
Adam, thanks for the phone call. Good questions.
Those are good questions.
I think you start with the fact that, unlike as we have discussed in the past, let's say go quarterback by quarterback, unlike with Jay Cutler, they have surrounded Caleb Williams immediately with weapons.
Right.
So he has an opportunity to use his skills and maximize his ability because he's got people to throw to that can actually get open and get deep and get behind secondaries. Jay Cutler didn't have that until it was way too late. And I think that's one area. The other part of it is he comes to the Bears more proven as a passer than Mitch Trubisky was, who lacked experience in college, and obviously they overdrafted him, than Justin Fields was as a passer, as a natural passer. So I think that is another thing to keep in mind. He's starting at a point where he seems more advanced in the passing game than those other two predecessors.
Listen, you know, there are so many. Jay Cutler is probably the last, like, really professional quarterback to line up for the Bears. Mm-hmm. Jay Cutler, he broke some of Sid Luckman's records, and Jay Cutler was a professional quarterback. He was also a guy that didn't protect the ball enough, got caught up in making plays and threw a lot of dumb picks. He did not have the team around him, and they had to change everything for him. I think this is a completely different situation. Number one, as you watch him in the various times you've seen him, whether it be on the field or on in practice, on Hard Knocks, whatever, the guy can deliver an accurate pass. The guy can hit a player in time on time. He can, you know, square his shoulders on the run and complete a pass going the other way. It's just he has God-given ability. You don't have to start teaching him how to play the position or figuring out. I feel like there's a lot that is on this thing that we haven't really talked about. Like Shane Waldron is a huge figure in this. Their issues on the offensive line are a deep concern when you talk about a starting quarterback, a rookie starting quarterback. But I think this kid has special to him. Now, The question he's asking is, how do they get that out of him when they couldn't get it out of other people? That's a legitimate question.
It is a legitimate question and concern.
A legitimate worry. No question.
No
about
doubt
that.
About it. Here's the other thing to consider, I believe. With Jay Cutler, you go way back to that. I don't think he came into his problems are well documented. We just talked about it, the lack of weaponry. With Mitch Trubisky and Justin Fields, the other thing to consider is that both of those guys, unfortunately for them, came into the organization and were given opportunities at a time where there was more instability than there is now.
Yeah.
You talk about Mitch starting as a rookie for John Fox and then having the transition to Matt Nagy. It benefited him, but it was temporary. You look at Justin Fields, thrust into the situation before he might have been ready, also mismanaged from the beginning because Matt Nagy's final season was something that really created abnormalities in the way that they would handle a rookie quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So Justin Fields, he suffered from that in his development. Mitch Trubisky suffered because of that, I think, in terms of the change in regimes and offensive coordinators.
But this guy is ahead of where either of those guys were. He comes in ahead of that.
Plus the stability. Plus
the
infrastructure that I think is more solid than theirs was. He's more talented, and he's in a more stable situation.
Here's the thing. I got into a long conversation with my brother, who was in town recently, and he wanted to know a lot of different things that I thought were really interesting. The point would be this. You like Ryan Poles? This is Ryan Poles. This is Ryan Poles' team. It's Ryan Poles' coach. Ryan Poles stayed with the guy despite the issues of last season where the defensive coordinator left under weird circumstance. The running backs coach had to be fired. Again, kind of the same problem. Then you get to the offseason and you got to replace your offensive coordinator and a lot of that staff, and you bring in a defensive coordinator. I'm just saying, we're talking about the stability of the organization, and maybe it is now stable because the quarterback is coming in after they made these hires. But if Eberflus doesn't win this year, they need to win this year. I'm not going to sit here and tell you what coach is on the hottest seat or how you're going to do. But the fact is, they passed on firing him and hiring someone like Jim Harbaugh, whoever is your guy, whatever offensive coach you're thinking about. But I'm just saying, so as much as it seems like everything is all happy and good and we're moving forward, there is also a scenario where if things go wrong, now you're going to have to restart the engine. Well, and that is something you don't want to do.
It's pro sports. I mean, that is the reality that is present in almost every organization in the NFL. And both things can be true. Both things can be true that you have a situation right now that when you talk about the strength of the Bears and why Caleb Williams is positioned well to succeed, it is in large part because of the organizational stability that is a product of the continuity that Ryan Poles created. He didn't make a change at head coach, and we could argue and quibble about that, and we did at the time, and we were clamoring for Jim Harbaugh at the time.
Yep.
But once they committed to somebody, you can't halfway commit to anything and do it well. So right now, as we sit here on August 28th, the strength of the Bears, in large part, one of the strengths of this organization is its stability. That's what Caleb Williams is benefiting from. He's got a head coach who has learned on the job. The communication between the head coach and his players is improved. We see that whether it's on Hard Knocks or at the podium or on this radio station. Matt Eberflus is better at his job today than he was a year ago.
And they've swapped coordinators. They got rid of Getsy, who is a first-time coordinator. They brought in a guy that has done it before.
They professionalized the position.
So there's that. And it's funny because we talked about the Eagles and how, we were talking the other day about that, about how they improved their coordinators and now they're a better football team. Is that what the Bears have done as well? Have the Bears gotten better having an offensive coordinator that comes from that has done the job and understands what his system is and is working with the guy versus having somebody that hadn't done it before. I'm not picking
on anyone. I don't think there's any question about it. I think you always go back to what is your default reaction when you have a job opening. For me, I always think that not to discriminate against people who haven't done the job before, but I always value experience.
Sure.
Especially when you're dealing with an organization like the Bears that has been in free fall for too long.
They've been in free fall.
So you want to get people who have done the job before. When I say professionalize the position of offensive coordinator, I know it sounds like a slight to Luke Getsy.
Right.
Luke Getsy's a bright mind. He's going to be better at the job with the Raiders than he was with the Bears because why? He failed with the Bears.
Yes.
You always learn from your mistakes. And I think Shane Waldron is going to be better here than in Seattle. Not that he got fired or got dismissed or whatever, but the more you do the job, the better you're going to be moving forward. And this is what the Bears are going to benefit from. That experience that Caleb Williams is going to lean on, and he's going to be better because of it.
312-644-6767. Steve is on the road. Hey, Steve.
Hey, good morning, guys. So happy to be talking about football again. my question's this. Don't you think Flusie's kind of on the hot seat? I mean, if he goes 8-9 or 7-10, aren't we looking for a new guy at the end of the year?
Boy, I hope not. It's a really good question. I think that when we look at Matt Eberflus, we feel completely different about him than we did maybe at the beginning of the summer even, mm-hmm. right? That this has done good. You know, watching him trying to coach up Caleb Williams about how to kill the clock mm-hmm. and going through that whole thing, that's a nice moment for him. Just trying to explain something to a young guy, even though it's not his area of expertise.
It's growth. He's shown some growth. I don't know that we can sit here and say before they've played a game that Matt Eberflus is on the hot seat. I think that he obviously is like any other head coach entering his third season. You want to get to the playoffs, but I don't feel like this is a playoffs or bust type of scenario for him as a head coach. Ross Tucker said it yesterday. I believe in this. There, no 9-8 record is the same, and it's not always created equally.
Yes.
If you start 2-7 and you end up 9-8, that's great. The arrow's pointing up. If you start 7-2 and you end up 9-8,
if you start 0-4 and you wind up winning 7 games,
it's a very different scenario and an outlook, and you end up with the arrow pointing up. What you want to do in 2024, you've got to finish the season competitive and with the arrow pointing up. If you're not doing either, then let's have a conversation about what's best for the Bears moving forward. Right now, it seems conceivable that they're going to finish with a winning record and with the arrow pointing up.
Sean is in Romeoville. Hey, Sean.
Hey, guys. Good morning. I will agree that stability and having an organization that is committed to you succeeding is definitely going to benefit Caleb. I know Justin's gone, but I just get a little annoyed, guys, when I hear you say that, you know, coming out of college, you know, Caleb is the much better passer. If you look at, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but if you look at their records, I mean, Justin threw about 60 touchdowns in two seasons at Ohio State, and you don't throw that many touchdowns scrambling. The kid didn't even scramble a lot in college, so
right.
You know, I know
right.
he's gone.
That's fair. No, it's a fair comment, but Sean, the difference is watching a guy in a 7-on-7 drill. The difference is just watching a guy come in and be a more accurate passer. I don't know what to tell you. He got a lot of touchdowns. He threw a good deep ball. They scored a lot. He was surrounded by great weaponry when he was at Ohio State. They had some top-notch players, and you see them all get drafted into the NFL. And they dominated other teams, and the guy had a great career. This is different.
It is different.
He's and different than
him. With
due
respect, Sean, I think that's a good point. You want to be, you know, show respect to Justin Fields and all he did at Ohio State. I don't want to relitigate that, but it is a fact that when Caleb Williams comes into the league, they're just the eye test is different, and you see the arm talent, which is different. Justin Fields probably suffered from the fact that he was protected so well at Ohio State, that he had pockets that were safe and clean, and he didn't have to process things as quickly as he did as an NFL quarterback. There are lots of reasons that might explain why he wasn't the, natural passer or why he didn't succeed as a passer, I don't know. He still can have a good career as an NFL quarterback. It won't be in Chicago because I think the Bears upgraded at the position. With due respect to Justin Fields, Caleb Williams enters the league as a more accomplished passer.
You know, Mike Tomlin's a great coach, and he runs a great system, and they won even with Trubisky when he left here. I think they can win with Fields now that he's left here. I just don't know that they're going to win in the playoffs. I just think there are problems, and this team looks better than some of the teams that were kind of lined up around those other players. We're going to talk Agreed. About roster building, et cetera, with our guy Dan Weider. Dan will join us next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Dan Weider.
You've got a guy with credentials. You've got a guy with some qualifications. And now there's just when done at its best, provides a level of steadiness and stability that helps create and stimulate success.
On-air contributor for 670 The Score.
Listen, we're not going to accept the status quo. We are going to push for more. We are going to strive for more.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast with our own David Haw.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Dan Weiderer with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Bear down. Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. Always a joy to talk to Dan Weiderer. He joins us now in the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Dan, good morning. How you doing? I heard you're having you're in the dark a little bit.
Oh, yeah. It's like the Stone Age over here. The Wi-Fi is not working in the Weiderer household this morning. So there's a... There's an outcry from the children downstairs. They're not able to get on Netflix for a couple minutes before they start eating breakfast. It's a major crisis for sure.
Thoughts and prayers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
yeah, I'm not kidding
no doubt,
you.
No doubt.
Not that's until tough. You lose the Wi-Fi, you don't realize how much your life is. I mean, it's insane how much you do check things and look at stuff and how much you need the bloody Wi-Fi.
There's no question about it. And so, yeah, we're dealing, and I think we're going to get through this. I really do.
So, Dan, when you look Good at the Bears roster, if you are able to access the Bears roster this morning, and you look at it, it does not include a long snapper. What is the plan for a long snapper, and how will the Bears practice if they don't have a long snapper?
Yeah, well, you'll just have to do some other things temporarily until you're able to get a long snapper. It's going to be really interesting to see which direction Ryan Poles pivots. And leaning toward a hope, I think, internally that they find somebody with experience to take him into the regular season as Patrick Scales recovers, you've got to kind of scour what's available to you, what's been let go from other teams around the league. What do you want to do in terms of solidifying that? Because you do not want to go into week one, and you do not want to walk into Soldier Field and have the debut of Caleb Williams defined by some operational issues in your kicking game on special teams. And so, hopefully they get that thing locked up sooner rather than later and point themselves in a direction that eases some of those concerns.
What surprised you or did anything surprise you about the cutdowns?
You know, obviously the curiosity was on whether Velus Jones was going to make the roster. Was he going to be able to carve out a spot? Do they see enough upside and potential in him still to contribute as more than just a kickoff returner? Clearly, he took advantage of his opportunity in those final three preseason games, had a really nice showing, running the football, and showing that he does have that explosive playmaking ability. And so they rolled the dice there. I think maybe the only other notable thing to me that jumped off the page when the roster was solidified was six defensive ends still on the roster. And we kind of identified that as an area of concern, you know, all through the spring and summer. And now they have identified some guys that they think have promise, and they're just going to kind of let that play out a little bit and see who can be those complimentary pieces opposite of Montez Sweat.
And they also, they put Jacob Martin on the short-term IR. So, I mean, they have seven, right? I mean, they're going to be moving guys around, whatever. It's just, it's really interesting that there are that many defensive linemen. And I understand DeMarcus Walker, you could consider him more of a tackle on third down, but it's just different than what we kind of expected.
It is, and now you have to try to bet on your development, you know, and you want to see Austin Booker come along as fast as he possibly can. You want to see what Daryl Taylor can do in a new setting. You want to see what Daniel Hardy can do to follow up on what was a pretty productive and impressive preseason and training camp. I think if you look at Daniel Hardy, you see a guy that really was rewarded for, you know, putting his best foot forward on an almost daily basis throughout the month of August, and to see that translate into results and then to translate into a roster spot, it's a nice reward and sends your locker room a message that those types of efforts and that type of production will be rewarded.
How do you feel about the Bears having the youngest quarterback room in the league?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of love it because those two dudes are like really, really easy to rally behind and see what their potential is. Now, I do think you are going to have to find ways to inject experience into their experience in 2024. And that means finding voices that can, you know, guide them a little bit, can tell them about things that they don't necessarily know that they don't know at this stage of their careers. And so whether that's bringing back a Brett Rypien to sit on the practice squad and be in your quarterback's room, whether it's leaning into the staff you've established with Shane Waldron and Thomas Brown and Kerry Joseph and everyone else, then you have to find ways to combine those things into providing that guidance and that direction for those guys. But you talk about two players who have taken the month of August and the extended training camp going back to mid-July to really better themselves. Caleb Williams and Tyson Bagent have done a great job at getting themselves ready for the regular season. And now we'll kind of test that and see what that looks like when week one arrives.
You know, could they do kind of a audition type thing? You know, once upon a time, they brought a bunch of kickers in, and that's how they found Robbie Gould. They had like a kickoff. Can you, I don't know, call Pat Manley, have him come over and have a snap off and see who he believes is the best one? And I mean, he's got all the information, for God's sake. What do you think?
Listen, I lived through the 2019 competition for the kicker position following the double doink. And so I've seen just about everything that there is to see when it comes to those types of things. If they want to bring out 12 guys and run them through a reality show style audition, then let's do it. You know, keep the Hard Knocks cameras there for one more week and see who ultimately wins the job.
So when you look at Kari Blasingame being cut, I know that it's been reported, I think Big Z said that he'll be back today. What's the thought process there? And is he going to be on the fence, or will his status be fluid throughout the season?
The latter part is a little bit harder to answer. The first part of that question is that the expectation is that Kari Blasingame will be returning to House Hall in short order. Obviously, they'll just need to handle some roster mechanics to get some guys to IR and work through some of the ripple effect of those things. The question kind of remains on how involved is the fullback going to be in Shane Waldron's version of this offense. And I think we need a few regular season games to feel that out and figure out what the worth of that position is. Now, Blasingame will also help you a lot on special teams. He's one of those core guys that can give you something there. And so they see a value in having him around. But now I do think it is worth seeing kind of how this offense takes shape and evolves with how they utilize the fullback and what they want to do in that regard.
How does this work with the practice squad? In other words, if you wanted to bring back Rypien, you could put him on the practice squad. Is that okay? And then, I don't know, he's been around a while. The money changes via the years, but there's no longer any limitation as to how long a guy can stick on the practice squad, how many years he can do it. It's a different deal now. It's almost like a place to stash players as opposed to develop them.
Yeah, it's so much more wide open than it was a decade ago. You know, there's just so much more flexibility. I really do think that it's beneficial to both the players and the clubs to be able to create continuity for guys that aren't necessarily good enough to make your 53-man roster, but are good enough that you want to have in your building and want to have part of your program. And so you do have a lot more flexibility. The practice squad is now ballooned to 17 players overall. And so you'll have that opportunity here in the next day or two to establish that group. I would imagine that there are a lot of guys that maybe crossed your eyes during the cuts. Reddy Stewart, Micah Baskerville, a couple names that jumped to mind immediately that will be back at House Hall as long as they're not claimed by another team off of waivers. And so you will have an opportunity to continue developing guys that, that you've invested a lot in to this point, and we'll have a, an opportunity to continue investing in. And as it relates to Rippon, yeah, it's like that, that window was opened a few years ago where now you can have much more established veterans hanging around on that practice squad and helping you in that regard. And so we'll see where he lands, but I would imagine that would be something that, that both sides would be leaning into if it does work.
How much roster jeopardy was Velus Jones ever really in?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think there's a very real challenge put in front of a player when you take him in August of his third season in the middle of training camp and say, hey, we're going to change positions on you. You know, I think there was a very real sense that we've got to find some sort of role for him to make him worth keeping around. As we talked about previously, this is a roster now where you don't have to just shrug and say, oh, well, we don't have anybody else. We're going to keep him. You've got a competitive group now. You've got some depth at positions that, that are meaningful. And so, yeah, I think that there was some questions inside the building, but then they watched Velus kind of adapt quickly. They understand he's got a long way to go to really learn how to play the running back position on the NFL level as more than just a ball carrier. But there were a lot of coaches inside that building that felt good, both on the offensive staff and in special teams, about what he can bring to the team. And I think that kind of just steered the discussion as they started to put the 53-man roster together.
You know, he's also a highly drafted guy. So you kind of,
sure,
you look at the idea that, you know, he's in his prime at age 27. He's been selected the first. Usually you give a guy 3 years, right? I mean, a guy, yeah, in that position, it's not a stunner that you made that decision. The only problem is that he's so limited in his contribution, and you still don't know what that looks like in terms of the kick returns and all that stuff. So I think there's also a little uncertainty about how you're going to do this, what you're going to do, et cetera.
Well, the kick return part of the equation is really interesting because, yeah, I think we're all kind of playing the wait and see game over the first month and a half, 2 months of the season to figure out how the whole league handles these new rules and how it alters the strategy and what you do and how much production you can squeeze out of the kick return game. Before teams start to say, well, you know what, screw it. We're just going to kick it through the back of the end zone and take the touchback and forfeit the yardage. The offensive part of the Velus Jones equation is much more uncertain because you're talking about an offense that already has a lot of mouths to feed. You've got three high-profile receivers in your passing game. You've got Cole Kmet, who you're paying a lot of money to produce for you. You've got DeAndre Swift, who you invested in free agency. And Shane Waldron's already going to face a challenge of making sure he keeps all those mouths fed and spreads the ball around in a way where the production is there, but then everybody is also still kind of rowing the boat in the same direction. That's not going to leave a lot of opportunity for Velus Jones offensively. And so you obviously figure he's going to settle into a gadget role early on and then we'll just kind of see how it evolves from there. But I don't see this giant window of opportunity for him to make a massive impact on the offense.
We talked a lot about your sit-down one-on-one with Caleb Williams yesterday, which people can read on ChicagoTribune.com, listen to on the Take the North podcast. Dan, what was your favorite part of the conversation with Caleb?
Yeah, well, you used a word there that I think maybe my favorite part is that it was conversation. It was, you know, just a sit-down in a very comfortable setting where the quarterback continued to kind of show you who he is, both in how relaxed he is in his pursuit of his career goals that he has and how ambitious he is in seeking out roads that will help him be not only a really good football player in the NFL, but one of the best to ever play the sport. And so when you marry those two things together, you understand why Caleb's energy has been infectious to everybody inside Hallis Hall. So that to me really stood out. And, you know, I do think he is a guy, David, I think you said it well yesterday, that the more you hear from Caleb Williams, the more you want to hear from Caleb Williams. And I think the whole football world and certainly us in Chicago are feeling that right now and really eager to see his rookie season get going.
Great stuff, Dad. Great catching up with you. I mean, this is fun. Until you actually get some games and you have some stuff to chew about, it's just all kind of hope and I just wonder, are there players out there that they're still looking at? I mean, you got, as you say, you got 10 defensive linemen, you got 6 defensive ends. Is there another defensive end they would consider? Is there anybody else out there that they would look at? Is there a tackle that they're looking at? Could you grab a tackle or two and throw them on the practice squad and see?
Yeah, and they're not in a position that they've been in some recent years where you're way up in the waiver claim. Right. You're still in the top 10 of the waiver claim order, but you do have to at least consider guys that get released elsewhere and figure out if they are worth adding to your roster. I mean, we're not in the state where we were, I don't know, was it 2 years ago where it was like six waiver claims and all of a sudden you know, you walked into week one with, you know, like 15% of your roster who hadn't even been here when training camp began. And so they're not there anymore, but you're certainly still exploring. And as you said, thank God we're here, right? Week one has arrived. And I think all the conversation now channels forward into a very meaningful game against the Tennessee Titans on September 8th that we will all overreact to in short order on September 9th.
Love it, Dan. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Dan.
All right, guys. Talk soon.
That's Dan Wiederer. He's not in the dark. He understands what's going on around him, for God's sake. It's fun stuff. And I got to tell you, this Bear stuff, you've got to download the Odyssey app, search for 670 The Score, and tap follow. You'll receive alerts on all of our Bears coverage. And if you can't get enough, check out the Take the North podcast with David and Dan Wiederer, and they're breaking down the biggest storylines ahead of the new season. Follow Take the North on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on The Score.
All right, boys. You know what time it is. It's victory. What we've been waiting for. Hey, we talk about legendary teams. Listen to me. Listen to this right here. We talk about the Patriots, bro. We talk about the Legion of Boom. We talk about the 85 Bears. They're going to talk about the 24 preseason Bears. Come on. Come on.
Okay, there we go. Undefeated preseason. We got the 85 Bears, and now we got the preseason of 2024.
That would make today the end of an era. Because the 2024 preseason Bears are no longer.
Nope.
They've dismantled the dynasty, the preseason dynasty. Austin Reed will have to go find somewhere else to make history, I suppose. Maybe he'll be back on the practice squad. He might be a guy worth keeping, developing. You know, when you have 17 spots, you theoretically could justify keeping four quarterbacks in the building if they so chose, if they were so inclined.
Right.
I don't know that.
I don't think.
They will.
No. I wouldn't recommend that either.
I don't know. I don't know that I wouldn't discourage. I don't think I would be okay with it.
It's too many.
I don't know that it
you
is.
You just don't need – well, I mean, here's the thing. You got a starter.
Yeah.
And you want him to last all year long. And
true.
If anything goes wrong, you got a backup.
Your season is pretty much down the tubes anyway if your starter goes down.
I think –
It doesn't have to be. But
you can be 500 with your backup. We've learned that.
You could.
Okay. So now, if you want to bring someone back and keep them among, that's fine. It's just you need, like, you're uncertain on the offensive line. Bring back an offensive lineman there, too.
I don't know.
Bring back.
I would lean toward. There's so many spots. 17's a lot.
Four quarterbacks. You got.
Look.
You don't have enough reps.
Listen, this is what we would do. This is what we're going to do next February or March. We're going to say, you know what the Bears should do every year? Draft a quarterback. They need to draft a quarterback every year because you need to stockpile that position. They have a chance right now to stockpile the position. You have your starter who's going to be here for 10 to 15 years, everyone says, and I believe it. You have Bajent, who has established himself as a trustworthy backup.
He's going to be here for at least 3 years more, right?
Okay.
Because that's his contract.
Great.
And then he's going to go get some money somewhere.
Put Austin Reed in the pipeline. If you want to have a quarterback factory like they did in Green Bay in the day.
And you know what? I got no problem with that. But you're saying Rippon and him. That's what you said.
Rippon is here temporarily. Rippon is here
for a week.
No. I'm talking about maybe half of a season, maybe a season. I don't know. I don't care. They're not going to be active. They're not going to see a snap. You're basically taking up space. What you're doing is, if in Austin Reed, you're giving him a chance to learn, grow, progress, develop. I'm okay with that. It's one roster spot. I don't think that you're fourth. Offensive guard is going to be that valuable either.
I disagree. I think your fourth offensive guard is more likely to play than your fourth quarterback. You don't need four quarterbacks.
I love these debates over the 70th and 71st players on the roster.
You're the one who wants to load up the practice squad with quarterbacks.
Only because I heard Austin Reed coming in. I thought that was kind of a funny moment. And given the chance to keep a quarterback you've invested some resources
you heard
in,
the
why
85
not?
Bears. Come on.
Why not?
Oh, God. I don't know. Okay. We've got Bruce Levine's going to join us. You know, it's an interesting idea. We talked about how Ryan Poles is in charge, and Ryan Poles brought back his coach, and Ryan Poles is building around that. What's going on with the Cubs? What's going on with Craig Counsell and Jed Hoyer? I'm curious. You know, Dustin seems to believe there's a rift of some kind.
Well,
I don't think there is one, but I would say it's not beyond the pale, David, to think that Craig Counsell, a guy who used to be a front office guy, maybe thinks about the game a little bit differently than, say, David Ross, who was kind of your guy.
The Drew Smyly situation, I think, requires an explanation. Bruce is on top of it. We're going to talk to Ozzie tomorrow. We're moving Ozzie to Thursday. But I think what you're describing in terms of a potential disagreement between maybe the front office and the manager is something that is worth exploring, because Drew Smyly's status, right now, he's still on the team.
Yeah, he is.
We'll find a little more clarity by the end of today, but it's worth talking about.
Bruce Levine next, Mully and Haw on the Score.